Welcome to NHL Draft Class. I am Adam Kimmelman, and it's finally here. It's draft week. We're in Montreal. Mike, you can feel the excitement. We're actually on the ground at a draft for the first time since we were in Vancouver in 2019. It feels good to be back.
Absolutely, Adam. You can feel the excitement, the energy, in and around Bell Center. The fans are excited, right? They're going to be able to get inside the arena to see a draft live and in person. And the fact that the Montreal Canadiens have the number one overall pick certainly adds to that excitement. So they're going to be cheering, roaring, whoever that first pick may be. But it's absolutely, Adam. It's really exciting to be back live at an NHL draft for the first time in 3 years.
It does. It feels like far longer. It feels like way longer than 3 years ago. But Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet, their draft expert, is joining us here today. So let's bring in Sam. Sam, how does it feel to finally be covering a draft live in person in Montreal?
Live, like in person, like for real? I don't know.
It's been a while.
It's weird. It's been too long. Now, what an awesome place. And you know what? It's amazing how the timing works out. You know, Montreal goes to the final, and after 2 years of being kind of denied this opportunity, they end up in a perfect position to host this thing. So I think that's pretty cool that they're getting that opportunity finally. But it's just nice. Like, the thing is about being here, and of course, you know, a few weeks back being in Buffalo, it's just so nice to see people in person, have those conversations where you can look someone in the eye and actually shake a hand and do all of those things. So looking forward to continuing, that process as we creep closer.
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. I couldn't agree more. Just seeing people, being around people, colleagues from other media outlets, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you as well. So thanks again for doing this. But Sam, there are some scouts who feel Shane Wright was underwhelming this season. He scored 94 points in 63 games in a season after not playing competitive hockey for over 13 months. Incredible smarts, good skater, plays a 200-foot game, relatively efficient on faceoffs, an overall team-first guy, proven leadership. He's number one on your final list. What more does Shane Wright need to do to earn the respect? I believe, you know, the three of us feel he should receive in this draft class. Does he deserve the criticism he's getting?
I think at some points, like, I watched him quite a bit this year, and at some points I see where that criticism was founded. But you have to look at the big picture, and there's two things that stick out to me. First of all, when playing with players that are of his caliber in a high-stakes event like the under-18s, he was at his best. And that was with two injuries he was dealing with. So, you know, leads Canada to gold medal, misses two games, still ties for the team lead in scoring. And of course, he's the captain on a gold medal winning team. The next thing is, I don't think it's been given enough credence that this guy missed an entire year of games. So when you go back and you think about all the exceptional players and how many games that they had the opportunity to play, from Tavares to Ekblad to McDavid, you know, these guys were essentially given that extra year of development, which allowed them all but Sean Day to make that jump directly into the National Hockey League. Now, I still think that happens for Shane, but when looking at where he is in terms of the other exceptional players, to miss a year and to have played a limited amount of playoff games is really, really super challenging. So if you went back and you added that year of play, I don't even think we'd be having this conversation. Now, the times are the times. This is the hand that's been dealt to us. It's been dealt to Shane. And I can see in situations where people were saying, yeah, okay, maybe the compete wasn't there, maybe the effort wasn't there all the time, but he's such a responsible guy. He plays low in his zone, and sometimes that takes away from what he's doing offensively, and that's when everyone's gauging. But 94 points, guys, still pretty good, I'd say. I would take that in any year. So I don't think there's anything more Shane can do. I think that some of the in-person stuff that happened at the Combine probably went a long way into making people think just how mature he is and why he deserves to be in that spot.
You know, Mike and I in our mock drafts, we agree that Shane Wright's going to be the number one guy. But I'm sure there's teams and there are scouts that have Slafkovský at number one. You have him at number three on your list. So I got two questions here. Why do you have Slafkovský behind Wright and Cooley? And could you see Montreal sitting there with Slafkovský number one on their board and make him their pick?
I definitely can see that with Slafkovský. The way I look at it is this, guys. if you're an American president, you have Ken Hughes, who's the general manager in Montreal, who for the most part has spent most of his time in the States, although he's a Canadian guy. I think you'd have a hard time selling it to the market that you're going to take an American player in Logan Cooley. If you're going to sell something other than Shane Wright, when you're in your own barn, and this guy's been the projected guy for 3 years, the only way I think you can sell it is you take a 17-year-old Olympic MVP and you sell that narrative. So, and that is no disrespect to Americans. It's no disrespect to Logan Cooley, because I truly think the world of him. And I think he's going to be a great National Hockey League player. But we have to consider other things outside of strictly looking at the player. And for those who tell you, who work in a National Hockey League team, who tell you that the media pressure doesn't have an impact, to a man, I'd say they're wrong. Or they're lying. No one wants to admit it, but I do think there's a lot of credence to that. So getting back to Slavkovsky going number one, that remains a possibility in my eyes. Why did I have Cooley at number two? I truly believe Cooley's the most dynamic player that this draft class has to offer. He looks a little to me like a blend of Trevor Zegras with the creativity, Jack Hughes with the speed and the lightness he has on his skates. And when I think about that type of player, they're really, really difficult to find. Another reason why I put him at number two is because when I went into Plymouth at the end of March, you know, John Edwards is the PR guy there. Does an unbelievable job. And I set up a couple interviews with these guys and sat down with Logan for a little bit. And I don't think Logan knew who I was or had recognized me and whatnot. Not that he should. But he went back to Johnny after and said, who is that guy? And John says, well, you know, he works for Sportsnet. He does the draft stuff. And he says, well, you go back to him and tell him he's got me ranked too low. So I said, all right, we're going to have to make a move here and move him up to number two. But love the young man. I think he's an unbelievable player. And the reason why I would have Wright slightly ahead of him is because I think there's more of a B game available for Wright, that if for whatever reason he doesn't pan out as that, you know, high producing offensive guy, I think his basement is being a guy who's going to be a third line guy who's going to be able to give you a lot of different options, whether it's the PK, winning important draws, right shot guy. With Logan Cooley, I don't know if he can impact your team if he's not playing in the top six, and likely for him, you know, on your top line. So I do project that to happen for him, but I also like to have a backup plan if things should go awry.
Great stuff there, Sam. You know, you talked about Logan Cooley there. Sometimes he's a tough player to gauge when you got him one-on-one. It's very rare that he smiles during the course of an interview. You got to maybe say something funny. Got to maybe, you know, get him going with some type of family thing going on to get the kid to smile. But he's all business, man, when he's talking hockey. So I totally agree with you that this is going to be a special player, whoever might get him. Now, you did mention three forwards there. There's a defenseman in this draft that I think has thrown his name into the loop as well. You have him number four on your list, righty Simon Nemitz. In the past months, I'm telling you, you know, I've been getting a strong vibe from people that the Slovakian kid, you know, may have a greater say among the top three of this draft. I mean, we've seen what high-end puck-moving D guys can do for an organization. Cale Makar, Roman Josi, Adam Fox, Miro Heiskanen. You know, those type players are hard to come by, and they're ultimately game changers for any club. So my question is, like, in your opinion, could the Devils or Coyotes, you know, pull the trigger on Nemitz at number two or number three? And would that surprise you at all?
Oh, I think he's definitely in play there. And I think about the New Jersey Devils, and, you know, let's just say Wright goes first. I think Slavkovsky is a perfect fit because he adds the size and skill that you know, the team is lacking, and he could probably step in right away. And, you know, it'd be pretty nice for Nico Hischier or Jack Hughes to have this type of player on the wing. Now, having said that, you know, there's been a lot of stuff flying around about New Jersey wanting to move that pick. And I think they have two targets that they feel that they can acquire if they drop three, four, five spots. So it's a situation where you're looking that if they do keep the pick, Slavkovsky seems like the perfect fit, but I don't get the feeling that that's where they're going to go. And so Nemitz is a guy who fits into that conversation right away. And you think about all the times that he's had playing in a pro league against men, going back to when he was 15 years old. You know, you see him at the Worlds, you see how smart he is. You see him be that guy who moves pucks extremely well, has that offensive side, yet still use some of those same assets to be able to defend. And so I love the fact that this guy has entered that conversation. You know, the other additional piece to that is a right shot defenseman. And this draft has a plethora of them, but at the high end of the scale, he and Juracek are the guys that are owning those two spots. I, like many others that I've spoken to, have Nemeth slightly ahead. And so when you add that right shot element to it, man, that adds just a different wrinkle and definitely adds more value. So there is no question that he will come into play as early as that second overall pick. And I could see him going anywhere from 2. I don't think he gets past Seattle at 4. So he's going to be a fun guy to watch for sure.
You know, I agree with you that Nemec could absolutely sneak into that top 3. I think this feels like the most unpredictable draft that at least I've been a part of since 2008 when I started covering them. It's remarkable that we're at the draft. We still don't know who's going to go where. It's really amazing that it seems like there's no consensus for who could go where in this draft.
It's nothing that I've seen. So I've been following the draft for a long time at Sportsnet. This is our 8th year and my 8th draft is being our lead analyst. And I haven't seen this type of volatility. And it's funny because, you know, you talk to NHL scouts and they tend to have that type A personality and they don't tend to stray too far from, you know, from what's in front of them. But to a man that I've talked to, my goodness, the volatility is there, and it's right there from the number one pick. I mean, a lot of this conversation is that we've had to this point. Is it right? Is it Slavkovsky? Is it going to be Cooley? Is it going to be Nemitz who sneaks in there? So all of these conversations points speak to the volatility at the top end of the draft. And typically we don't see that. Part of that is this draft class doesn't have an Austin Matthews or a Connor McDavid or a Nathan MacKinnon available. And so players are a lot more bunched up. You know, there are a lot of different elements that are leading, in my opinion, to this volatility. You think about two Russian players who, you know, going back to the start of this draft year before things happened with the Ukraine and Russia, in Ivan Mirshnichenko and Danila Yurov, who, in my opinion, were top 10 picks. You know, obviously Mirshnichenko has had the health issues. It looks like he's on the path to recovery, but that will probably make him slide a little bit. And Yurov, unless you're a team with multiple picks, are you going to be worried about, you know, public backlash that may come from that pick? Are you going to be worried about the player wanting to come over? Are you going to be able to get the player over if you're that team? So you have that volatility in and of itself, you know, a projection of 3 to 4 Russians to go in the first round that aren't already here. I'm not including Menchukov in that because he's here and I believe he's here to stay. So that speaks to the volatility. The next is what we talked about already. There's not a lot of separation between these players. The next thing you have is you come off the recency bias of the cup and you think about big defensemen and you think about, you know, forwards who can withstand the heavy play. This draft class has a lot of smaller skill forwards to offer, but it also has a lot of really big defensemen to offer. So does that change the value and the volatility of where some of those players might go? And then the last thing, obviously, is the pandemic. And what has that meant to the development of players? I speak specifically to the CHL because that's what I know best. The OHL didn't play, so guys missed a year. Does that mean that the O2s and the O3s that might've got passed over get a better look in this draft? In the Quebec League, fits and starts, an altered schedule last year. What does that mean for those players? And of course, the Western Hockey League played just 24 games. So you really have essentially looked at all CHL players missing a good chunk, or if not a full year. So that again speaks to the volatility. And you can say the same thing about a lot of the European players that were playing in the J20 or the U18s that didn't get that opportunity because they shut down. And if they were good enough to get called up, they didn't play much in their men's pro leagues because they weren't ready. So a lot of reasons, Adam, that I think this thing has become so unpredictable. But most of it has to do with there's no clear-cut number one guy and everyone else seems to be bunched up.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. Just it's going to be, it makes it fun. It makes it hard for us, but it makes it fun. I want to touch back on something you mentioned when you were talking about the defensemen. Nemec and David Juracek seem that have sort of separated themselves from the rest of the group. There's that second tier, I would say, like Denton Mateychuk from Moose Jaw, Kevin Korchinski from Seattle, Minchikov, who you mentioned, Owen Pickering from Swift Current, and the two kids from the national team program, Lane Hudson and Ryan Chesley. Of that group, who do you think has the most potential to be a top pair guy at the NHL level?
It's awesome. And each of these guys brings such a different element to the table. So the way it's going to play out for me is I think Korchinski is the guy that has the most upside. His puck skills are unbelievable. His ability to walk the line, really, really good. And looks like he's going to continue to grow. Of course, his dad played in the Western Hockey League, so you have that background there. And then I look at Pavel Minchikov as a guy that I'm so, so impressed with, who has a lot of those same abilities. But he's a little bit slighter of frame. And I think, you know, there was an adjustment period for him that made him be a guy that came on to the scene a little bit later. But he's also very committed to what he's doing and staying in North America and continuing to develop his game. So for me, it's going to be probably Korchinski, then Minchikov. And then you get into the interesting dynamic. I think Chesley is a guy who looks National Hockey League ready in terms of he knows what he is, what he has to be as a steady defenseman who self-proclaimed is the best pure defensive defenseman in this draft class, but a guy who skates well, who angles, who does all of those things that you like in the details of a game for a defenseman. Then I look at Owen Pickering and I think, man, this guy is so skinny. His eyes are single file. Like he's got a lot of room to put weight onto that frame and to think about what he's going to become. Person that he is, awesome in the interview process, that he's a high ceiling guy, but more of a project. So you'd have to be patient in order to take a guy like that. And then that Lane Hudson, guys, I don't even know what to say to you about Lane Hudson. When I was in Plymouth at the end of March, three straight games, a 3-3, which is difficult for any team to play at that age. He was their best player. And that's with Cooley and Gauthier and all the big heavyweights were in the lineup at that time. Over the 3 days, he was their best player. Now, having said that, you look around the National Hockey League, those guys are unicorns. There's not many of them. And then you see Samuel Girard get hurt in the playoffs for 2 years in a row, and you're thinking, oh, geez, like, is this a guy that you can go to the playoffs with? Now, I know he provided some documentation that say he's going to be bigger and the potential to get to 5'10 is there. If he were 5'10 right now, he's a top 15 pick all day long. But I just don't know, unless there's a team that has multiples, and there are many of them in the first round, that you can go there with Lane Hudson worried about what his ability is to withstand the rigors of a regular season and then into the playoffs. But man, is he a good player. I love watching this guy play. So I think I'd put him more towards the bottom of the list. And really, it's nothing more than a size thing for Hudson. So awesome group of these second tier guys. Mateychuk is a guy who brings tons of leadership to the table. You know, a really good citizen, you know, named after Cy Young, which is a pretty cool element to his game. But he's a guy who commands the ice when he's out there. So obviously he's going to be in that mix. So if I had to go back, recap quickly for you, I think it's Korchinski, Minchikov, Mateychuk, Pickering, Chesley, and then Hudson. But Chesley is the guy, in my opinion, who has the most potential to move up and break up that party a bit.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Sam. You know, the Pickering kid, like as you were saying, it's the, I think the ceiling is so high with this kid once he puts on a little bit more on that frame. And as you said, you know, just a delight to talk to. He has a lot of stories. He'll go on, doesn't give you the robotic answers real good. And as far as Lane Hudson goes, I'm with you. Adam and I have been, you know, talking the praise of Lane Hudson for a while here on NHL Draft Class. And the kid is just phenomenal and what he's capable of doing out there. You know, I tell you what, Sam, like when I watch him play and I saw him a lot of video clips and highlights and we watched some of the gameplay. There was one shift he had and we have it on .com as well, where he controlled the puck for over 45 seconds. One, it was just him controlling the puck around the net, behind the net, in front of the net, giving goes with teammates. I mean, the kid is relentless in what he does. And you know what? I'm with you. If the kid was maybe 2 inches taller, he's a top 15. And I'll go on record to say, Sam, if he goes 5'11", he might be in the run. He might be in that discussion for the number one overall pick too, because he is that good a skater and that dynamic and what he does for that club. But I mean, you mentioned the pandemic a little earlier, Sam, and that leads me to this question. When looking back on this draft in 5 to 6 years, do you think we might be wondering how a certain player dropped to the second, third, or fourth round? And do you think there could be a few NHL caliber players falling through the cracks, you know, due to the lack of playing time for players and lack of viewings for scouts in the two seasons prior to this one?
I think what we're going to see is a more of an influx of the re-entry players, the guys who've gone through it once and maybe twice because of that developmental time frame. So the general sense is that I'm getting that this is not a strong draft class from those that I talked to. Now, having said that, there's probably 50 guys that are all potential first round picks. So does that mean that the draft class is better than we think, or does that mean that it's not as good and that's why there are so many? So you can kind of throw that question around a little bit. But getting back to the point of guys slipping through the cracks, there is going to be more of an impetus to draft the re-entry players who you've had probably a book on in their under 17 year. You had not much of a book on through last year. And then you've watched them play, especially the second half of this year when they've had the time to get back up to speed. And you're saying to yourself, wow, this guy's progressed a long way from his U17. And some of the things we picked apart in that U17 year are now all of a sudden improved. They're different. The player has grown. His game has expanded. He's added layers. We're going to see a lot of that. But you will also see some of the players that are first-year draft eligibles who slip down through the cracks, as you say, that end up being better players than maybe projected because we have less information on that player. So I'm fascinated to watch some of the O2s and the O3s go through this thing and just see exactly where they end up. Because typically, you know, in a normal draft year, we've been there and done that. We've seen this guy. Like, how much better is he? Maybe later in the draft, we can go down that road. And I tend to take a different twist on the re-entry players. And I think that they're older. You have more certainty. And in a typical draft year, now I've watched this guy play for three and a half years. Like, you're more certain about what his physical maturity is going to be. And, you know, maybe he's an immature guy. Maybe he's a late bloomer, that sort of thing. And so they've had that opportunity to experience that growth that you don't get to see in first year draft eligible. So there is a huge fascination for me with the O2s and the O3s in this draft class.
The flip side of that is, who's a guy that you have graded a little bit lower, a guy who you think could go mid second, even third round, who could surprise us and jump up into the first round?
I don't know if that guy exists who's a re-entry guy. But I look at someone like a Tristan Luno, who I have outside of my first round. I think there's some concerns about the lower body issue as a guy who might get there. Lamoureux, you know, as a guy that I have just outside the first round because of his size, might get in there. If I'm looking at guys that are re-entry guys, I can't help but think about Lucas Edmonds and the year he had with the Kingston Frontenacs playing on Shane Wright's team, which meant, and Paul Edwinski, who are both first-year draft eligibles, meaning that they would – so many scouts would have been in there to see those guys, that you're looking at Lucas Evans and you're like, whoa, 100-point guy, what's going on here? Like, okay, is his first year in the OHL? This doesn't ever happen at that age. So he's the guy that is going to fascinate me. I don't think he gets into the first, though, Adam. Tucker Robertson out of Peterborough is another guy who's been through the draft once. He had an awesome year. I think he plays a real pro style of game. So he's a guy that in my mind has an opportunity to do some good things, but I don't think jump up into the first. So I'm not looking at any of the re-entry guys to get into that first round, but some of the guys who sit on my, you know, outside of my first round, I think definitely have that opportunity. I think, you know, maybe about Ryan Green or Cameron Lund coming out of Green Bay. You know, Luno and Lamoureux, who I've talked about a little bit already. You know, Jake Carabella is a really interesting guy out of Guelph. Then you have his teammates and Danny Jilkin, who might end up getting in the first round as a late birthday guy. Another teammate, Michael Butchinger, who's a Guelph kid defenseman, who's a good puck mover, who might sneak into that first round. I think there are a lot of guys here, Adam, in this first year of eligibility, who have potential to get into that, you know, 27 to 32 spot that most of us won't have projected. But a lot of that depends on, you know, how many Russians go in the first round? How many guys does that push down? What do you think about, you know, drafting a positional need like a big defenseman when maybe typically they're not first round guys, but this year they are because of the recency bias and how close we are to the end of the Stanley Cup. So there's a lot of different elements that go into that. But I think there's huge potential for several guys to jump into the end of that first round.
Mike, you've liked Lamoureux too, right? You've seen him.
Yeah, absolutely. Great skater. It was interesting there too, Sam. You mentioned Tucker Robertson, a player that I'm really interested to see where he's going to go. Now, he's not going to go first round. I don't think he'll go first round, but I think the fact that you brought him up is interesting. The kid scored 8 goals in 18-19, sat out, you know, 19-20 with the cancellation of the OHL. And this year, 41 goals, right? And 17th in the O with 81 points. So he's a right-hand shot center. Real interesting kid. Has, you know, decent size at 5'10", 190. So, and David Spashek, the defenseman from Sherbrooke in the Q, another player that I think a lot of people are curious to see where he's going to fall in this draft. One more for me, Sam. Kind of an interesting one, and I know fans are curious about it. Do you feel out of this draft class, there are a few players that could jump right into the NHL following training camp in September? Do you sense that there might be a couple or more than a couple of guys that are capable of doing that?
Well, probably more than last year. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, the pandemic is playing a key part in that. But it is kind of crazy to think that Nick Sillinger went 12th to Columbus, played 73 games. J.J. Mosher, you know, went to the second round for Arizona, 40-some games. We're the only two guys who maintained a regular spot. Now, five others, you know, the Mason McTavishes, the Eklunds, those guys got their 9 games and then hit the road back to, you know, to their respective spots. But it was only 7 guys from last year's draft class that had NHL games, 2 of them essentially as regulars. And so, you know, those guys are probably going to make that jump this year. Now, when I look at this year's draft class, you know, what is it? Johnson and Power, the last two guys to go first overall that didn't go right to the show. So you'd have to think Wright is probably going to make that jump despite missing a year. I think Slavkovsky's ready right now all day long, every day. I think Nemitz has that opportunity as a young defenseman to do that. But then if you get down the list a little bit, I don't know if we're going to see, you know, that huge number. So if I had to project right now, Mike, I'd probably say 5 guys would have the opportunity to make that jump and play regular minutes, you know, along the lines of a Cole Sillinger. I don't think the number is going to be higher than that, though.
Sam, we talked about the U.S. national team program before with Lane Hutson and Ryan Chesley and Logan Cooley, some also. You know, there could be as many as 8 guys from that team going the first round this year. Is there someone from that team that we haven't talked about that's really intriguing to you as far as, you know, A, where they could end up going in the first round, and B, what their pro potential is?
Well, Chesley is the most interesting guy to me. And I, you know, he's been a first round projection for me almost all season long. But just watching him, you know, even at the 18s, I thought he was really good there. So I think he has the potential to move up considerably more than everyone else. When I look at Cooley, you know, I think he's well placed in that top 3 to 5. If something gets goofy early on, I look at Gauthier, he's a top, you know, 6 guy there. I think about Chesley. I really like him a lot. I don't know if Hudson's going to end up going in the first, like we talked about earlier, but I don't, you know, there's not that guy to me that's really going to slip out of line and make that massive move forward. So I think that it's nice to see for the program, though, get back to the quantity that we saw in 2001 in terms of first round picks. I don't think the quality is as high right through. But it does start with Cooley and Gauthier as guys you project to go in the top 10 and very high in the top 10. But it's nice to see the program after a couple of down years get back to that prominence once again with the quantity that we're going to see. But I don't, you know, if I look at Seamus Casey, is he a guy who ends up in the, you know, in the first round? Is he projected to go there now? You know, some people have him there already. You know, Rutger McGroarty is a really interesting guy that I've had him towards the bottom of the first round all year long, but you know, you meet him, there's a lot of substance to that player. There's you know, real good hockey background with him as well. So he's a guy that might surprise people and jump up, and he'd probably be my pick between he and Chesley, one in the front, one in the back, that if they were to exceed projections from what we've seen most of the year, mine personally, those would be the two guys that I think would have the opportunity to jump the most.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if you know, the NTTP can crack the record of 2019 when eight players were taken in the first round, Sam. I don't think it's going to be done. I could see maybe six, maybe a max out seven players taken from the program, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, that team was a lot of fun to watch, and, you know, Lane Hudson out and with the speed and the, you know, what they were able to do with under Adam Nightingale there was really special. But, you know, Sam, this was fantastic information, a great discussion. Adam and I respect all the work you put into promoting, you know, the future stars of our game. We know how busy you are, so really appreciate you giving us a few minutes today. Fans out there, please check out Sam's work at sportsnet.ca. Sam, thanks so much, and looking forward to draft night, buddy.
I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun.
Mike, there was a lot of great stuff there from Sam. Anything that he gave to you kind of stand out to you?
Yeah, it's hard to ignore what he was talking about, Simon Nemitz, right? Adam, I asked him if there's a possibility if Nemitz could go two or three or even higher than many draft boards have him going. The right-handed D really impressed second half of the year. Both of us have heard, were able to hear a lot of things at the combine about how impressive this player really was. I mean, does he jump into that mix? We're all talking about Jure Slafkovský being the highest drafted Slovakian player. Well, what if it's Simon Nemitz, right? The interesting thing to me, though, is on NHL.com, we have our mock drafts that are now up. And one of the most intriguing spots was the Arizona Coyotes choosing at number three. We both had Shane Wright going number one to the Canadiens. We both had Slafkovský going two to the New Jersey Devils. But then at number three, Adam, there you go. You're throwing in the monkey wrench, as you usually do. You know, last mock draft of the year, you got Simon Nemitz going to the Arizona Coyotes. I had Logan Cooley, the center for the National Team Development Program, just for some of the reasons Sam was discussing. He loves Logan Cooley, the playmaking, what he's able to do. And I've said this before, and I've had Logan Cooley going to Arizona since mock draft, 1.0. It's, you know, the Coyotes have a big right wing in Dylan Gunther. You know, they got the D and Victor Soderstrom, Matias Maselli, Josh Doan, another right wing. So I think they need to load up a little bit more with players down the middle, and knowing what the organization, wants to have and to help out some of the players they have there already. I think Logan Cooley is the guy, but you have Simon Nemitz going there. I think it's a gritty, gutsy pick. I like it. We've discussed this a lot on NHL Draft Class, but why do you have him go Arizona picking Nemitz?
So if you look at what Arizona has on the back end, let's start back there. The future is very uncertain for Jacob Chychrun, their number one guy. There's a chance he could be traded at some point during draft week. It's something that, you know, Bill Armstrong went on record as saying at the trade deadline, they were taking calls. They weren't making calls, but they were taking calls on Chychrun. So if you're going to move your number one defenseman, you need something to replace him. And they really don't have that high-end defenseman prospect. And I know you mentioned Victor Soderstrom, but, you know, I don't think he projects to be that number one pair guy where Simon Nemitz does. And, you know, we've talked before, you don't pick for need in the draft. However, when you think the best player available also fills a need, then that's got to be the pick you make. Now, look, everybody knows Arizona needs scoring, but, you know, they have Clayton Keller. They have Nick Schmaltz when he's healthy. You mentioned Dylan Gunther. He's on the come. You know, he was, seventh in the league in scoring in the Western Hockey League. So there's your injection of offense. Now you go out and you get Simon Nemitz. Now you've got your foundational defenseman to build around, whether Chychrun's there or not. So to me, it's going to come down to between Cooley and Nemitz, I think. And
yep,
it's going to be a very difficult discussion for the Coyotes which way they go, because you're either going to add maybe the most offensively gifted centerman in this year's draft versus maybe the best defenseman. So it seems like it's a win-win proposition for the Coyotes either way. But, you know, we always talk about positions of importance and building through the middle. We've seen it. And you know, we talked about it with Sam. You get that elite puck-moving defenseman, a Makar, a Josi, you know, an Adam Fox. Simon Nemitz sort of projects to have that same kind of impact on a team. So if you can get him at number three, then I think it that becomes your choice for the Coyotes. And I don't think it's a bad choice. I think it's something that can help them. Look, I don't know if Nemec is ready to step into a lineup this season. I know Sam said there's a chance. We've spoken to him. More likely that he spends either one more season in Europe, maybe in the American League, although it's really hard to put an 18-year-old defenseman in the American Hockey League. But we're talking two seasons from now. He could be your number one defenseman in Arizona. So I think it's a pick that makes sense for them for the future. And, you know, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know if it's possible, but I think that's a direction they're leaning in.
Yeah. One more thought on that, Adam. I totally agree with you. It wouldn't surprise me if Nemec goes number two to the Devils. That's how much I respect what this player has done. And I think you would agree with me that it seems as though, at least when, you know, since we've been doing the drafts, it just seems difficult for teams, for clubs to not take that name player when you're drafting at the top. I'm not saying Simon Nemec is not a name player, because he is. He's in that group that's at the top of this draft that is going to be, we expect him to be, an elite top two pair defenseman in the NHL one day. But I just think when you have names like a Shane Wright, when you have a big wing that can play and be such a force with a top flight centerman in a Yuri Slavkovsky, tough to pass on those guys. The centerman with the speed, the skill, decent size, with, you know, who's as brilliant as far as being on the ice and knowing what to do, when to do it, and Logan Cooley. It's difficult to pass on those guys because those are the guys that are going to be your marquee players, right? It's very difficult to pass. So, and that was another thing that kind of, you know, went into my thinking behind Arizona, a team that, you know, needs those name players, needs those players that are going to be flash and dash and bring fans out of their seats. That's to me, that's Logan Cooley. But again, if fans are willing to be patient, I'm sure GM management would be patient, but if fans are willing to be patient, Simon Nemec is going to be dynamic as far as a pick goes. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to what Sam was talking about. How do you sell this to your fan base, right? And he talked about it under the guise of Shane Wright. Like, you got to convince your fans that's the right guy, whether, you know, you need them to believe in you. And, you know, is Logan Cooley a bit of an easier, quote-unquote, sell to the fans in Arizona? For sure, but I'll tell you a great story. 90 draft. Flyers had a Czech winger top of their board, and they didn't think they could sell him to the fans. So they didn't take Jaromir Jagr when they had the chance at number four. They took Mike Richey. So they regretted it. They regretted it because they got scared because they didn't think they could sell a Czech winger to their fans. So again, you if you believe in the guy, you take the guy. And that's what I think Arizona is going to do if the opportunity presents itself with Simon Nemec.
Going to be interesting, Adam. Can't wait.
We're here in Montreal. We're ready to go for the draft. If you still want to learn about who your team could like, I highly recommend binge listening to NHL Draft Class previous episodes. We've talked to all the great scouts. We've talked to all the players. You want to hear from Shane Wright. You want to hear from Logan Cooley or Yuri Slavkovsky. You can do that. Go check out a previous episode of NHL Draft Class. You want to hear from the great minds of NHL Central Scouting on who the best players from the Ontario League, the Western League, the Quebec League, Europe, the United States Hockey League. Go back and listen to episodes of NHL Draft Class. They are all there for you, all there to listen to learn about who your team could take. Also, you can go to NHL.com. We talked about our mock drafts. They are all there at NHL Draft Class. And Mike worked on top 10 lists for position, and there's a lot more there, right, Mike?
Yeah. We got tons of stories and content on NHL.com. And, you know, Shane Wright feature that ran recently. I had a big Logan Cooley feature. We have basically features, Adam, that you've written. Dave McCarthy, our freelancer in Toronto, you know, also wrote plenty of stories on all basically profiles on all the first round projected players. So go back, check out all the content on NHL.com. It'll be worth your while. And in addition, just what Adam said, just check out the past episodes of NHL Draft Class. You won't be disappointed.
Absolutely. But for right now, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.